We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Angie, welcome to Sit Down Startup Founder Podcast. Excited to have you share the Standard AI story and specifically the pivot to get to product market fit. But would you first just tell us what Standard AI is doing now and maybe how much money you've raised?
Sure. So Standard AI, as of now, is taking a new path forward, and we're really at the forefront of applying computer vision to retail. And so what I like to say is, you know, you hear a lot about generative AI these days. AI is like the topic of a lot of conversations, but what we are focused on is computer vision, because from my perspective, it's got the most unlocks for physical spaces. And so we use computer vision and applying it to the security cameras in the ceilings of retail stores in order to unlock all sorts of awesome insights about how shoppers are moving throughout the store. We anonymously track what they're doing, very similarly to the way a shopper conversion is tracked on a website. And so what we're doing is bringing those really rich insights and shopper journeys into a physical store that has since only been available on a digital space. So pretty awesome. Like we're on the cutting edge of this technology and applying it to physical spaces and all of the things that retailers can leverage this technology for solving problems within their store and driving revenue.
That is really cool. And how big is the company?
Right now we have about 80 people.
Wow. I'm excited to go under the hood and learn more about how just that growth story. But first, would you share just like where you're from, where you were born, and kind of your brief journey into becoming the CEO of Standard?
Sure. So I'm originally from a small town in Ohio and outside of Dayton. And I went to school for chemical engineering at the University of Dayton. And didn't, as most people entering school, had no idea what I wanted to do with that degree or life in general. Had just a massive amount of luck and opportunity to get a job with Anheuser-Busch in brewing. And so I spent the first six years of my career moving around with Anheuser-Busch. From there, I went to Sara Lee Fresh Bakery. And the reason I bring that up is I spent the first half of my career in these really established, quality-driven CPG companies, very large establishments. And then after moving to the Bay Area, I got sort of really excited about meal kits. And as a working mom, that industry, and I became one of the early employees at HelloFresh back in 2015 when they were first coming out of the market. So I call that my gateway startup. but I was so excited about the product. I was like, I have to try this out. Once I joined an early stage company, the pace and the innovation of it just became such a great fit for me. And so since then, I've had the opportunity to work at a couple of other tech companies. I was at a stealth mode company named Habit. After that, spent several years at Lyft before joining Standard 3 years ago. And originally as COO, and then just in January was named CEO.
Very cool. I love the unique journey and like the start in the Midwest of the United States. The founder of the CEO of Zendesk is from Ohio as well. So it seems like
everybody knows someone from Ohio. We're everywhere.
It's so cool. I know it shouldn't be a surprise, but it's just like, that's awesome. I'm excited to jump into this, and thanks for kind of just like painting that journey of you know, coming out to California, Bay Area, and going all in and just learning in a really powerful way at these, like, you know, next generation kind of once in a lifetime, a couple of them companies. So really neat. Help me with maybe one. I know you've only like just the story with Standard AI is shorter, but is there a lower moment that you could share that you've already experienced in the CEO role that you feel comfortable sharing as an inspiration to founders who are in that right now?
Absolutely. I think everyone that is a CEO or founder has these moments. It's a tough industry and role to be in, with obviously a lot of rewarding things as well that keep us coming back. But the reason I took over as CEO in January is we completely pivoted the company. And so when I joined 3 years ago, we were known as Standard Cognition back then. And our primary focus was on autonomous checkout. And I think we went through a journey very similar to what many startups, tech companies have to go through, which is, you know, somebody said this to me last week one day about an unrelated story, but it stuck with me, which is sometimes being early means you're wrong. Like, you know, it's not product market fit when you're early. And we had to go through the painful exercise of realizing that autonomous just wasn't scaling at the pace that we were expecting it to. And it doesn't mean I don't think there's incredible opportunities there. There are places where autonomous is thriving. You know, there's some cool use cases around stadiums and other maybe like smaller markets, like in airports. But that wasn't the aspirations for Standard. It wasn't where we wanted to go. Now, that said, when I joined Standard, you know, especially with that background coming from CPG manufacturing, I was immediately asking about what we were doing with data and insights, because even as excited as I was about the autonomous applications of computer vision, I was starting to think about like all of these problems that we could solve. And, you know, having been in supply chain and knowing how difficult it was to know what was actually happening in the store, I call it ground truth integration. It's like as an operator, just having this big empty space to not really know what happened makes it so difficult to interpret and understand, you know, solve problems and understand how to get better. And so I was really excited when I joined. I was just like, okay, autonomous checkout, but what are you doing with the data? Like, how are you thinking about using the insights? And so as we started going through the process of just seeing, not really experiencing the scale that we wanted to on the autonomous side, we made the decision to pivot the company. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage to start a company, to found a company, to pivot an idea, because you're really making as informed decision as you can with very little data, right? So you have to just kind of go on as much information as you have available at the time. And we saw a great market for what we could do with computer vision and decided to go for it. And so, you know, one of the hardest things that we did is actually wind down our current customer base. So that going back down to revenue zero is a really hard and difficult moment, because you're, you know, you really are putting all of your emphasis and focus on making this new idea successful, which is really important in a company to be successful, especially a small company where every resource that you deploy is incredibly important. You just really can't afford to try to do too many things at once. And so that was a big moment for us. You know, it was a difficult moment, because in order to take the company forward on this new path, we did really reduce team size by quite a bit. So we had to right size the team, restructure, do the things necessary to set us up for success. Those things are really painful. They're hard decisions. And we had to bring the whole team along with us. And, you know, I'm really proud of how we did execute on the pivot and how we came together as a team. And then, you know, now it's been externally, we announced it in March, so we're still really early. We're only about 6-7 months in now, but have made tremendous progress already. It's really exciting.
That is really cool. Can you tell us step by step the order that you had for that pivot, and including things like when you did have to lay off the team, which no one wants to do, how much research you did and when you did that research? Was it before or after you made the pivot around where you're going?
That's a great question. Yeah, because there is this balance of making those types of decisions fast, but then also wanting to be as thorough as possible. And so, you know, for us, it was actually more than a 6 month period. And because it came with a CEO transition at the same time, our previous CEO and founder, he was very supportive. I mean, he was the one who initially asked me to take over as CEO, and he still sits on our board. We have a great relationship, and I was hesitant at first. And so there was a period of time where he and I really wanted to make sure that we had a strong transition for the executive team in place before we really went down the path of making those permanent decisions. And so what I would say is from really the moment that we decided that autonomous was probably not going to be our story until the time that we executed on the pivot was definitely in the 7 to 9 month phase. Wow. I don't know if there's actually this moment that we pinpoint it. You know, it was more and more information coming to us that we were processing and thinking through while we were investigating and pursuing other opportunities and then bringing those together. And so there was quite a bit of planning that, and what I would call is a discovery period before we just went for it. Part of that's my style. I think there are some people out there that would have maybe done that faster, especially in a startup environment. And there's some benefits to doing so, but I'll tell you this much, where we landed 6 months later after doing some research and discovery is different from where we started. Even 6 months in early stage companies is might as well be 10 years. A lot can happen in that time frame, which is once again why making those types of decisions is so important to do. But we really wanted to research, do some customer research, make sure that we were really comfortable with the path that we were taking. And then we had to use that to craft the team that we were taking forward because the skill set was going to be different depending on which path we decided to pursue. And that was really important for us. We didn't want to make a decision too soon, but we wanted to make sure that we didn't wait too long to where we were burning, our cash position is something you're always, always worried about in an early stage company, managing that cash, making sure that you have the runway that you need. And so the intersection of those two things is really important in order to pick the timing and go forward.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that discovery period is really interesting to me. I'm curious, what did an average day for you look like during that discovery period? If that's possible.
I'm chuckling because it's a really good question on how there really wasn't a predictable day. But what I will say is we tried to be very transparent, especially with the extended leadership team, about what we were seeing and what we were thinking about go-to-market. So, this was not happening in secret. This was something that we were doing as a team. You know, we weren't necessarily at the time. It took a while to actually get to the conclusion that we weren't going to pursue autonomous at all. Initially, it sort of started as what might we else we do, or what other applications are there for us to think through? And I would say during that time, it was a lot of go-to-market discussions, discovery, conferences, meetings, asking for feedback, iterating on product ideas, bringing some prototypes to market. And so, we really were building some of the products that we're taking to market now. We had started building during that time frame and getting feedback on. And that really did help inform all of our decisions. And so, during that time, we were still launching and deploying and operating autonomous. So as the COO, I had at least 50% of my day focused on, continuing to grow and nurture and expand on that business. And the other 50% of my time exploring in discovery, having conversations, working on what other paths forward we might have. And so really was an interesting time, but a difficult time nonetheless, in terms of taking all of that information in and making decisions that affect the entire future of the company.
Oh my goodness. That would be so hard. Like you have two jobs in that moment. You're like a startup founder for a random idea that you have some data on while being a founder of an existing company. I'm curious, how many prospects did you speak with during that discovery period? If you had just to give a range, is it like 50? Is it 20? Is it 200?
I mean, yeah, it's probably in the hundreds because wow. We went to multiple conferences where we set up and got in front of as many customers as we could.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, some of the, in the hundreds, it's very high level. When you get down into now getting very specific feedback on, you know, some ideas, that's probably more in the 10 to 20 range where we were saying, okay, now we did this broad discovery. We've narrowed this down. We have the product definition in mind, because it kind of starts with an idea or a concept, and then it turns into the real product definition and what problem am I solving for my customers? And then being able to match that up against ensure you're driving an ROI, and then that ROI that you're driving for your customer is going to be able to be, you know, I think to finish that statement before I say what I was going to say is like that you're going to be able to charge what you need in order to get them an ROI and to get you margin. And I think that's something that really changed in the last couple of years, because, you know, previously we had a pretty long time there in the VC world where the VCs were taking on that risk, and it was, the messaging was across the board, you know, growth at any cost, growth at any cost, growth, you know, top line revenue was the focus for almost all valuations and funding. And whether you were delivering on the margin at the same time, there was just this, you know, faith that that margin was going to come. And with all of the different, you know, things happening in our economy and in the investing world in the last couple of years, that's really changed. And growth is still obviously very important and a great measure of whether you're finding product market fit, but ensuring that you've got that defined path to margin and where you're going to be making money, it's just much more emphasis on that now than there had been historically. And so part of our new path forward was shoring that up as well. And, you know, when you're growing a company, when that growth actually delivers margin back to the company instead of having to fund that growth through discounts, much, much easier and, you know, more, I guess, from my perspective, easier to understand how to deploy resources because growth is getting you more cash. And so that's a great place to be in, but that was not necessarily the philosophy that startups were following for the previous decade.
100%. And it sounds a lot healthier now, but yeah. It makes you ask the tough questions sooner. Yeah, exactly. When was there a conversation with a prospect during discovery period that represents when you got conviction to go all in and burn the ships and move in this new direction?
No, I would, you know what? I wish there was. I wish there was like this moment that said, now we know with certainty that this is the path forward. I would say that happened about 2 months after, because we landed our first pilot, and with the, you know, with the margin we were looking for, with the pricing we were looking for, with a great retailer. And that was the validation, but we couldn't afford to wait until that moment to be able to have that like full validation to move forward. So there was a period of probably like, you know, when I really think about from decision-making to execution to when I would say that moment of, yes, all right, we did it. It's working, right? There was probably a solid 2 to 3 months there from when we executed the pivot to when we landed that first POC and got the validation that we were looking for.
So you were like, I'm pretty sure this is the right direction, 2 to 3 months before the POC that you're referring to.
That's right.
Wow, that's really cool. And what were the things that you were hearing before the decision that gave you that confidence that was different than what you have with your existing product?
I think for me, and you know, there's a little bit of art and science to it, you know, but I'm an operator. My whole career, I've been an operator. And so to me, the confidence that I had came down to that ROI discussion and that calculation, because when I started looking at that, the results that I believed our technology was going to be able to get for our customer and the period of time, it became, you know, we kind of joke about internally about getting into this like no-brainer territory, right? So like, if I can describe the problem that I'm solving and I can price it at a level that makes sense for both of us, then I can feel very confident about that, right? And that's another thing about this shift on margin and where we need to be. It's like when you're bringing something to market that is, for all intents and purposes, like just very underpriced to get adoption, it's difficult, and you have to sort of fund the belief that one day you're going to be able to charge what you need to survive. And to me, that is a way scarier position to be in. And it requires that like larger leap of faith and this, you know, visionary leaders that can paint this picture. But not that we're not visionary, but I think in terms of what we're delivering and the problems that we're solving and them being practical and the solutions being affordable, that to me gave us, you know, this roadmap or this blueprint for success that I felt very comfortable executing on. And that was the difference for me.
Mm, that's really good. Thank you for sharing that. Just a couple more questions left, but I'm curious, how did you consider defensibility in the decision with this pivot?
I mean, I think it's incredibly important because I did emphasize the path forward, but there were a couple of things that were, I guess, non-negotiables for us in terms of our path forward. Like we didn't just go out there and say, okay, we're going to come up with a new idea from the beginning and it can be anything that we want, right? So some things that were really important or constraints that we had to operate within were, one, that it would leverage our current tech stack. I mean, we spent 7 years building this tech stack to run autonomous. We have incredible IP and amazing capabilities that we've unlocked using computer vision. And we wanted to continue to leverage that technology. So that was sort of constraint number one. Constraint number two was, is there an ROI for our customer? Are we solving the right problem? Are we delivering what we needed to? But then number three is, are we differentiated? And, you know, is this something that's going to stand out in the market? Is this going to be something that we truly do better than anyone else? And all of those three things had to be true to make us feel confident in the path that we were bringing forward.
Mm, thank you for that. That list is good, because I didn't make that connection until just now, that you were able to leverage what you had been building. You had to tweak it and change it, but like the market was the main shift in like what you were doing, but exactly, the underlying technology. Got it.
Exactly. I think it's really a shift in commercialization strategy more than anything. Like the tech stack is effectively the same one that we've been building for 7 years. It's really just reimagining its applications.
Yeah. I hope is a word for a lot of founders right now who are in this pivot decision, which I know personally was really painful for me. Just a final question that I love to ask, just like, this is a Zendesk podcast, and at the end of the day, customer experience like is what it is all about. You're talking about the ROI, you're talking about all that. Help me with how you view customer experience, just like now that you do have a product that you're moving with the company.
You know, it's really interesting, because with this shift, we also changed who our primary customer is. And I think that's a really interesting thing to highlight, which is, in an autonomous checkout solution, it's really down to the shopper using your product, right? So it's a B2B2C product, and that we're selling the technology into a retailer who is then gaining consumer adoption on the app or whatever in order to use the technology. Now, what we shifted to is a pure B2B play. So, you know, what we're what we're doing is providing those insights to the retailer and to the brands. We've also brought brands and CPG into the fold of customers that weren't there before. And so it's interesting that you bring that up, because when we were actually helping to explain the shift to our teams and, you know, actually state what we are doing, define our mission, that was the biggest shift of all that we acknowledged, was the shift in who the customer was. So when we were talking internally about the product, because once again, the tech stack is the same, but the use case and the primary customer that's using it is different. That's what we changed over everything. So that's been a focus for us. And I think to that point, it's right why it required so much discovery and so much like research, because we were completely shifting. And I think, you know, when you're in a B2B type product, you do have to do more work to understand that customer, because there's a lot of things that you can do as a shopper. You can go experience it and you can shop in a store and you can rely on your personal experiences with it. But if you're selling into a store manager or to a retailer, if you didn't work in that space, then ensuring that you can truly understand what they're facing and what problems they're solving is ultimately important. And I think, you know, I just so happen to have spent the first half of my career in CPG. It's not by accident, right? It is by design that bringing all of that experience helped to understand and bring that customer perspective into light more, because, you know, that's what I lived for the first half of my career.
Yeah. Angie, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for your time. What's the best way, if I'm a founder and I'm trying to reach out to you, maybe it's this small piece of advice or something like that, is it Twitter or LinkedIn or X or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is better. Yeah.
Same here. That's, this is amazing. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. It's been awesome. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for Startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guess the target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.